Hello, this is Julie Stanford of Essential Business Radio. A few years ago, I was very lucky to present a show called Business as Usual for Radio Reverb in Brighton, and I believe that a number of those shows are still very useful and relevant today. In business, your employees are one of your most important assets. It pays, therefore, to keep them happy and fulfilled in their work. But despite your best efforts, sometimes things will go awry. And in this episode, I ask my guests, Matt Penfold of ACAS, Paul Bonnet of Bonnet's Estate Agency, and Rebecca Thornley Gibson of ASB Law, how can you deal with disgruntled employees? Welcome to the three of you. We talked last week, didn't we, how crucial prevention is when it comes to employment practice. You need to be aware that so many things that can go wrong could be prevented if you only thought about it in advance. You know, when you're taking on an employee and when you're putting together all the right written particulars and contracts and such like. But really what I wanted to talk about this week was when it goes wrong, because for some people it does go wrong. And I think more and more employers are frightened that it is going to go wrong, and so possibly are behaving in their businesses in a way that they might not normally have done, but they're running scared because they're thinking that any moment now an employee is going to take them to a tribunal. So I wondered really, Paul, as an employer of many years, have you ever had a problem with an employee?
I've had one problem where someone actually went to where we received a solicitor's letter from an ex-employee charging us with constructive dismissal, and we wrote back to that firm of solicitors explaining the history of the relationship with that employee and how we'd explained what was happening very clearly to them, and there really wasn't any case to answer, that we'd been very clear about what the terms and conditions of the new post were, and that we couldn't understand why they would have done this, and we didn't hear anything more from the employee or from the solicitor. Only a few years later I did actually hear that the employee was very upset that they'd done this, and I think they'd done it in an emotional moment after they'd left us, and that when they looked at it, you know, in the future, that with hindsight, they thought actually it was nothing to do with Bonnets, it was actually my own situation.
But that must have been for you a moment of great relief.
Yes, that was when we didn't hear back from the solicitors. And also it was great relief to believe that the person finally realised that we had done nothing wrong, that we'd been absolutely clear about everything. And that was very good to know.
Because I think, Rebecca, you said last week that most employers are really trying to do it properly. You know, I'm the Pollyanna of business. I will warn you all. I do have a bit of a rosy view of businesses. So, you know, hit me if I'm wrong. But I would think that most businesses start out trying to do it reasonably well.
They do. And actually, sometimes a frustration of mine and my colleagues is that businesses are trying to do things so well and be so tolerant that they're actually inactive in progressing matters with employees. So you can go too far down the, sort of risk management scale, I think, in not taking action. And that can have consequences for other employees who see that you're not taking action, who then start to think, oh, well, perhaps I'll act like that as well.
Yes, so which is what we're really thinking is that because people don't really know, employers don't really know the law, they're not entirely sure, so therefore they're nervous. They're sort of slightly running scared, really. So Matt, what would you say to that? Is that your experience, that sometimes we get into trouble because people are just not understanding?
Yeah, I think that ignorance, in a very positive sense of the word, employers simply not knowing because of the amount of employment law that's out there. Employers not knowing perhaps the rights and wrongs of what they can and can't do if they believe an employee has gone off the straight and narrow leads to bigger and bigger problems. And I would urge employers that find themselves in that situation where they think they ought to be doing something, pick up the phone and get advice from one of the resources that they've got available to them. I mean, I'll speak for ACAS and Rebecca will speak for the legal profession. I mean, there are people out there that you can turn to, and usually not for earth-shattering amounts of money. I mean, the ACAS helpline, for example, is free. You can phone up, set a scenario out to an independent advisor, and they will give you some advice. Yeah. But the worst thing you can do, I'd agree with Rebecca, is just let poor performance run on unchecked.
Yeah.
But Paul, do you think your knowledge or lack of knowledge, I don't know, obviously I clearly don't know how much you know about employment legislation, but do you think you have behaved differently sometimes because you've thought that there may have been legislation in place which would affect your decision?
Yeah, I think so. Sometimes you're quite cautious about, say, if you think someone might require, say, a verbal warning, and you're not really sure quite how far they've gone down the line to require a verbal warning. Or you sort of think, well, actually, if we just let it settle for a day or two, maybe it will be okay. Mm. And then we'll talk about it again and just have a discussion. Don't give a verbal warning. And have a, basically, in other words, have a bit of an appraisal of what happened rather than turn it into a confrontational situation. And therefore, you keep their trust and their faith. And if you can do that, you will then tend to have an employee with good morale. Whereas, obviously, once you've had to do something like start giving people warnings, you can sometimes be on a slope towards the fact that, you know, they're going to leave you quite soon, either in a bad way or maybe in a good way for them and a bad way for you, or bad for both of you. So. Mm. I'm very, very keen to try and stay away from jumping back at someone too quickly, you know, because in the old days you'd have probably said, you know, I know with the way my boss was with me 25 years ago, crikey, you know, he'd probably be, hung, drawn and quartered for some of the way he treated his staff. But it's a completely different affair now.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah, and I hear exactly what Paul is saying there, and I can understand the situation that he's talking about, and a lot of employers find themselves in that situation. There's a very fine balancing act between upsetting an otherwise good employee and drawing their attention to some poor performance. And I guess really it's only the employer that can decide how that balancing act should end. Last week we were talking about recruiting the right people and having policies and procedures in place, ideally having consulted with employees so that they understand what's required of them. And I know that this week we're talking about when things have actually gone wrong, but ACAS is a great believer in the nipping it in the bud type conversation, the improvement conversation, which is short of any kind of formal warning.
Yeah.
This is where we merely bring into somebody's attention the fact that the expected standard isn't being achieved, and an inquiring really as to whether or not there's any reason for that, anything maybe we can put in place as an employer to help that standard be achieved, and hope, beyond all hope, that that's enough to put people back on the straight and narrow.
Yeah. Mm.
Rebecca, what would you be saying about that?
Well, I'd go back to the ACAS guidance in respect of disciplinary matters, where it's actually clearly stated that a quiet word is often all it takes. And I think that phrase needs to be borne in mind by employers, in that a quiet word isn't a get out, but a quiet word will often nip it in the bud. It will make the employee realise the behaviour, if it's a conduct type issue, has been noted, and it will make sure that if there has been a slip, perhaps in performance, that the employee needs to get back on track pretty quickly before formal action does start. So, you know, I think those three words, a quiet word, really ought to be at the forefront of employers' minds, in that that is what they're being encouraged to do.
Mm. Paul?
One of the things that's happening a little bit in a lot of companies now is not poor performance, but stress. A lot of people are quite stressed because they're worried about the fact that maybe the business isn't earning the money it needs to do to pay them as well as it would like to. They were having to work harder because the business has maybe had to make people redundant. So they're doing the work of one and a quarter or one and a half or two people. And they obviously feel under pressure. But at the same time, the needs of the business mean that you can't actually employ three or four more people. That's why otherwise you would. And so you get people who get stressed. And also in a small business, which a lot of businesses are, people know each other very well. Consequently, their conversations and relationships, their sort of conversations between each other, can sometimes be the kind of conversations you would never get in a large corporate environment where people are they watch their P's and Q's, they're always very careful what they say to each other. Whereas in a small business, people's emotions come out, and sometimes that can be quite negative, where people are under a lot of pressure. And those people, you can understand the pressure they're under because you know it, because you're living in it yourself as well. And maybe they're under a bit more pressure than others. How do you deal with that kind of situation where you don't, you know, where you say, actually, that was a bit inappropriate because you were over emotional in the way you spoke to someone? And they'll go, well, I'm not surprised I'm over emotional. I'm stressed out. I'm working too hard. It's quite a difficult thing to handle.
Let's ask the experts, Paul, shall we? No pressure, either of you. Rebecca, how would you handle that? I mean, I think when you're talking there, Paul, I'm thinking that so much of this comes from that tension, and I use that word really in its purest sense as well, between the employer and everything that they're up against and the stress they've got because of the nature of business at the moment and this recession, and the employee who may not, you know, they have obviously their own tensions, their own stresses, but they're going to be different. And there's a point where they both meet. How do you handle that, Rebecca?
Well, the employer's got a duty to provide a safe working environment for all employees. And if one employee is causing an issue because of their behaviour, which is then stressing potentially other employees, then actually the employer's got a duty, a health and safety-based duty, to deal with that. Because you may find that, you know, somebody does call in sick the next day stressed because of the atmosphere in the office, perhaps. And there is a duty on the employer to ensure that that safe working environment is mentally safe as well as physically safe. And that's often forgotten by employers. And therefore, if nothing else, I think the employer can go to the employee that's causing an issue and actually say, I'm doing this for the benefit of the other employees as much as perhaps your benefit, to let you know that the perception of your behaviour, the perception of your attitude at the moment, is that it is unreasonable, perhaps.
Matt, what would you say? I mean, you probably more than anyone around the table have been in positions of that point where the different needs meet, you know, of the employer and the employee.
I mean, hearing what Rebecca was saying there, I would paraphrase there. What I'm hearing is open communication, you know, approaching an employee and talking about the impact that their behaviour may be having on others in an organisation is maybe one of the few ways that you can approach a situation like that. Yes, we do have a duty of care towards all our employees. And if somebody is upsetting the equilibrium, then they need to be told that that's what's happening. And I do appreciate that there will be sensitivities in doing that in a small organisation where everybody may be sitting in an office that's perhaps, I don't know, 20 feet by 20 feet. It is difficult. I accept that. It's a balancing act. What's preferable? Do we want that person to upset their colleagues in the office? Are we willing to live with that? Or is it easier to live with the difficult conversation that we may need to have with one of our members of staff? We may be talking about a particular sort of stress here as well, that this sort of recessionary stress that people have over job security.
Yeah.
Now, how can you deal with that? There's no magic wand you can wave and guarantee people their jobs. I don't even think your employees would expect that much of you. Maybe a step that all employers can consider taking is being as open and honest about the business situation with their employees as they possibly can.
Well, in a way, that's the problem with a very open business, that you are very open about the finances of the business, how successful you're being. You're becoming more and more successful. But obviously, we're actually taking on a new member of staff in 2 weeks' time, and that will help, for instance, in our business, for everyone to feel more supported. But at the same time, it's a gamble in this market. Because, you know, we are in a recession, but you need to do it. And we've done it partly to give everyone more support. And, you know, obviously it's going to cost. It's another salary.
I think I've read somewhere that one of the biggest bugbears of employees against employers is the lack of communication. Clearly it's crucial. But I just would also like to take it forward now to this. Okay, we're not communicating well. Something has gone wrong. We've had the letter, which, you know, thankfully, Paul, you didn't then. There was no follow-up on that. Rebecca, you must really be in this position, because I bet there are employers ringing you because it has all gone wrong, or they've had that letter that Paul received. How do we deal with this then? So, we've got a disgruntled employee. We've had the letter. We've been taken to a tribunal. How does this work? What are the employers? How can an employer, because we're here really to talk from that perspective, what can an employer do? What's open to them? What happens?
Right. Well, once you receive your employment tribunal claim, things have gone pretty wrong. And even though you may feel that you've got a very good defence to rebut the allegations, the problem is that you still have to deal with that tribunal claim. And that will involve management time. That will involve potential reputational issues, which employers really don't like. And employment tribunals are public forums, so it's never a particularly good
So it's all
strategy.
The employment dirty washing
it is,
out
it's,
in public?
You know, and dirty linen tends to get washed on day one of the tribunal when it's reported by the papers, and then the papers don't tend to report the real story at the end. It's very difficult from a reputational issue. There's the legal costs if lawyers do get involved. And obviously, if you lose, there's compensation, financial compensation in the majority of cases. So the problem is you have to deal with it, though, as an employer. Whether you think you're right and you can defend the matter, you have to deal with it. And it can take some time. Average tribunal cases for unfair dismissal, probably anything between 6 to 9 months. So you have that worry there. But I would say you deal robustly with the matter. You deal with it by complying with tribunal directions. So if the tribunal has told you to disclose all relevant documents within a certain time frame as an employer, you do that. If they've told you to prepare witness statements by a certain time, you do that. If you start messing the tribunal around, you become their enemy almost. You need to be the tribunal's friend.
Are you innocent
in cases
until proven guilty? In that, I mean,
yes,
this is
you are to a certain extent. Yes, you are, or you certainly should be. But as I said, the reputational issue, particularly internally, if people are aware an ex-colleague has brought a claim, does make life quite difficult, particularly if that ex-colleague is asking people who are still in the business to provide witness statements for their case.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that. That's terrible.
That can be very difficult, and that can create all sorts of conflicts of loyalty. What I would say, though, is to try and give employers some degree of calm about this, though, is that last year there were 53,000 unfair dismissal cases that were brought in the tribunals. Of those, 33% were withdrawn, so they went nowhere. 33% were conciliated by ACAS. So there may have been a financial settlement, or they might have been withdrawn on the basis that the employer's perhaps not bringing costs order against them.
So
or
is Matt our hero, Rebecca?
Matt's a hero for a third of those cases. And then 13% were actually successful at tribunal. So that's
right.
Only 13% of those cases that resulted in a finding against the employer. And I think employers need to bear that in mind, that many of these cases don't actually get anywhere because they are withdrawn. There might be a nuisance settlement quite early on in the case that the employer decides to pay. And then if only 13% actually result in an adverse finding against the employer, I think that shows employers aren't doing too much wrong at the moment.
I'm very encouraged by those statistics, actually. And do you know what? We were talking last week about myths and realities. That flies in the face of the kind of sensationalist...
Yes, the impression you get.
Yes, yeah, exactly, yeah. So. Yeah. So let's think then. So we've heard how it can be if, you know, I mean, as you were talking then, Rebecca, I was thinking about all the poor employers' time spent. Well, I was actually chaired a board for a charity, and they had one claim against them. And I remember the time and effort that went into producing the information for the tribunal. As it was, it all came to nothing. But they spent hours and hours and hours of this charity's time trying to get the information together. So just thinking, Matt, you know, from your perspective of a conciliation position, what would you wish employers had done before they got to that point, or to try and offset that happening in the first place? Because although it's encouraging that Rebecca's saying only 13% of them end up with the, I mean, from an employer's perspective, it's encouraging that they end up having to pay out compensation. There's still all the angst and the work and all of that awful upset that a tribunal is going to cause all the other cases.
Mm. And that's what we've all around the table here got experience of. And it's not so much whether or not you are found, for want of a better phrase, guilty or not guilty by the employment tribunal. It's the pain that it takes to get that far, or the pain that it takes to get to the nuisance settlement.
Yeah.
The thing that I wish, that I would urge employers to do is to try and find out exactly what employees want to resolve a grievance before the employee gets to the point of actually wanting to put in a tribunal claim. Now, that relies, of course, on the employee raising the grievance with the employer. And there is a requirement now on employees to raise any complaint they may have about their employment rights with their employer or any subsequent win that they may have at the employment tribunal could the amount of money they may get could be reduced by 25% up to 25%. So I would urge employers to seek resolutions that are outside of any court system. And there are places you can go. Lawyers will offer compromise agreements, which can negate any complaints to an employment tribunal. ACAS itself offers a number of services. We have pre-claim conciliation, where if somebody believes that they have had an employment right breached, then they can approach ACAS. And if both parties are willing to talk voluntarily outside of the employment tribunal service, they can reach an agreement which would be binding and which would negate any complaint to the employment tribunal on the agreed grounds. Mm. Employers should consider whether or not an issue is maybe ripe for mediation, whether or not an employee perhaps has a personality clash with another employee. How can you get that sorted out? Maybe one of them has to go, but maybe you could mediate a settlement, and there are mediators available. ACAS and other organisations have professional mediators. If you've got to that point of having had an employment tribunal claim put in against you as an employer, then still, as we mentioned last week, ACAS individual conciliators will have received a copy of those papers, and they'll make contact with both the employee and the employer and suggest, look, do you fancy settling this outside of court? What will it take? And that's not always going to be about money and financial settlements. There are things that conciliated settlements can put on the table that tribunals won't. Something as simple as, I just wanted an apology. You know, tribunals yeah. won't give that. They won't order that. But a conciliated settlement could include that.
Paul, as an employer, what are you thinking as you're hearing?
Well, one of the things I'm thinking is that if you're communicating with your employees and your employees are communicating with you all the time, these kind of scenarios don't really happen. Mm. Well, they happen very rarely because you realise what's going on and you manage to turn things around between you. And that's what you can do. I mean, you know, you're always getting ups and downs in business. And I would say that, especially at the moment, businesses are very, or can be very fraught. But if you continue to speak to your staff and vice versa, and if there are issues coming up, you sort of thrash them out, basically, you can often get back to the situation where you go, yeah, that was yesterday, but it's not like that today. In other words, you can pull each other back from the brink and find that actually you really love working together, but you've just had a few things that have not been brilliant for a while. And that's not unusual. Life's like that as well. So, you know, I think it's communication is the art.
Rebecca, what are you thinking as you're listening?
Certainly communication is key. I find situations, though, sometimes where employers become very entrenched in their views, and it does become a them and us, or who's going to win this battle. And what seems reasonable to me as a potential settlement isn't necessarily going to be reasonable to the employer, who now sees it as a personal attack on them, particularly in a smaller business. So communication in a vast majority of cases will help. But there are still those situations, and there always will be, it's human nature, where it's very entrenched and one party wants to win at the cost of an awful lot of other things. So we have to deal with those sorts of things, and sometimes compromise agreements will work for those, as Matt said, whereby a sum of money will be given to the employee to waive their rights to take any tribunal claims. Sometimes the employer will refuse to give anything and will just wait for the employment tribunal claim to drop on their mat.
It's such an enormous subject, and it's been really very good of you, all three of you, to come along. This show was originally recorded for Business as Usual on Radio Reverb. I'm Julie Stanford. Thank you for listening to Essential Business Radio.